Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Today, we are joined by Jessica Wilson. Jessica is a dietitian, author, community organizer, and an incredible human. I am so honored to have on the show today someone who I am learning so much from and just honored to have this conversation with. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thanks so much. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm stumbling over my words because I feel like we just hung out for 2 weeks, even though we didn't, because I was listening to your incredible book, It's Always Been Ours, Rewriting the Story of Black Women's Bodies, that just came out in February of 2023. First of all, massive congrats on your book and publishing it. And as I was just sharing with you before we hit record, like, there was something so profound and powerful about listening to you and you tell your story. I feel like, you know, as a white woman, I've done an episode on like examining my white privilege, and I'm always trying because I want to do better, right? Like, I want to do better and know better, and I'm always going to continue to mess up, but I want to keep, and I buy the books and I try to do the things. When I read the books, I hear my voice in my head. And so listening to you tell your story and your lived experience and the lived experience of others, I feel like I walked away just deeper impacted than I had with other books. And now I really want to go back and support the authors and buy the audiobooks too and hear their words in their voices. And I share all that because I really encourage the listeners, you know, listen and read however you want, but it was just so impactful. So thank you for also doing your audiobook and your voice. And yeah. So yeah, tell the listeners a bit about yourself and I will shut up.
No, you're good. Let's start with, I became a dietitian in 2006, I think. And that was a moment, I would say. I was not happy in that moment after doing the exam and very calories in, calories out.
And then
the next like 5 years was all the unlearning because, mm-hmm. you know, once you had like signed, you know, you got the, you know, clinician stamp, they can't take it away from you. So then you can just learn everything they didn't tell you, which
right.
then, yeah, led me into Health at Every Size community, literally the Health at Every Size think tank in California.
Yeah, because you're in Northern California, so
yeah.
right? So you're like in the hub of so yeah. many rad humans, too, yeah. doing incredible work.
Right. Marilyn Wan, Deb Burgard. Yeah. So Deb and other folks were literally at that table, and that's how she and I connected,
wow.
became friends. I know. Just chilling with the Health at Every Size celebrities. Just my life. Yeah, then quickly, well, not quickly, it started just to unravel when, you know, we were calling it lack of intersectionality 10 years ago. You know, a lot of people give me pushback. Oh, but, you know, Health at Every Size, intuitive eating, like look at the Health at Every Size principles. It has social justice in there. I'm like, I know, I literally put it in there. Like I helped
wow.
rewrite those
Oh
principles.
My gosh.
Me, Deb, and Fall Ferguson rewrote those principles. And so people be like, no, 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 you don't understand. It's about social justice. I was like, I thought it would be if those words were in there, but that did not happen.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
It's wild. And yeah, and then 2016, and I just needed to take like a break from mm-hmm. everything. And it wasn't until like 2019 that somebody asked if I wanted to do like a presentation at an eating disorder conference that I was, you know, again, it'd been a couple of years, but I was like, Deb, what's going on? What's the lay of the land? And then here we are 4 years, yeah,
wow.
ish later.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much I learned from your book. And when I first asked you to come on and speak, it was because I'd been following you and admiring your work. And then we both spoke on a panel for Medical Her Story on size stigma in relation to sexual health and reproductive health. And I was just like, oh, yeah, I knew like Jessica was a human I wanted to get to know and just amplify even more, of course. And then I was so delighted that you wanted to be on the show. And we're going to talk about, and we will talk about these just infuriating AAP guidelines around weight for children, and then why Black kids are more impacted than others. And then I dug into your book. don't want to have Jessica on for like 12 hours. No, I'm just kidding. But it was just like as a fat woman and a mother of a tween who's going through puberty, being so enraged by the American Academy of Pediatrics new guidelines that we'll talk about, but then going through your whole book and it just really honing in and confirming that the root of all of this isn't worrying about kids and obesity, it's racism.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's full stop. Yeah.
Full stop. Yeah. And I'm sure there's people listening and even myself that will sit in the discomfort of that. And that's right. Important.
Yeah. Right? That's always the piece. I just let that, you know, drop right then. I didn't, you know, have to qualify. I didn't choose to qualify in
right?
those moments. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But it's hard. It's so hard. This is, you know, stuff for years in the making. When I, you know, used to push back initially on Health at Every Size and intuitive eating, all the people would just start like crying at me. It wasn't even like yelling and crying, like, why are you trying to take these things, you know, away from me? And I was like, it's not about that. And yeah, how I say it's white supremacy, it's not diet culture that is, you know, making us feel the ways that we feel about our bodies. And, you know, inherently it is the systems and structures. It's not like chasing some quote, like thin ideal or a beauty standard.
You know?
It's not that. It's chasing, like purity and whiteness and all of the, you know, privilege that's afforded to thin white folks.
Yeah. I had like this huge aha moment as I was driving and listening to you. When you address, when people say that is the last socially acceptable prejudice. And I see the face you're making. We're on video too. And you know what? I've been guilty of saying that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of our listeners are like, yeah, because that's my lived experience, right? Mm-hmm. I am so tired of just going to the grocery store and having people look at me like and judge me and needing to buy two seats to fly in an airplane. And I can tell no one wants to sit next to me. And I'm like, well, let's just fix this. You know, I'm just tired and fat jokes are still acceptable, but jokes about racism aren't. And I'm like, but wait, that doesn't quite sound right. You know, like as you start thinking and saying, you're like, but wait a minute. And then you had said in your book, you know, that people say this, but for Black and especially trans people too, you said, for most of us, dismantling diet culture will not make it safer for us to exist in society. And I was so thankful I was at a red light because I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes, like what? This is, I made it about me yet again, right? Like, no, it's so much bigger than that. And that it is not the last socially acceptable prejudice. Like it's yes, something we need to talk about and address. But again, like there's so much more that we need to be doing to make our society just a safe space for Black people and trans people and other people in marginalized bodies to even exist in.
Yeah. At that point, when I was having that one-on-one, or that it was actually a group conversation, it got really awkward. Like that was at the height of, you know, we were talking about children in cages at the border, and you know, it was very acceptable to, you know, maybe we didn't like feel good about it, but it was happening, and you know, our bodies weren't on the line at the border. And yeah, same thing with trans kids now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, this is what's happening. You know, we may not feel good about it. We may think it's wrong, but it's still acceptable because it's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll never forget. Harvard had this video that I thought was incredible, looking at what it is like to enter a doctor's office existing in a larger body and how mm-hmm. the chairs don't always fit and all these lessons. And it's very visual. And as I would do public presentations talking about plus size pregnancy, I would often share this video. And I shared this video with Dr. Nicole Rankins, who's a Black OBGYN, because I thought it was a great example. And she was trying to work on her weight bias, right? And within that presentation, in that video, there is a doctor that quotes some research and about how pretty much that the being fat is like the last socially acceptable thing. Wow. And Dr. Nicole Rankins sent me an email response that basically said, Jen, I just want, you know, that this was something that came up, and I immediately apologized because that's just my normal reaction. I'm so sorry. I didn't, I didn't really, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I immediately stopped using that video in my presentations. But I still was like, but the research and, but that, it's a Harvard video. And I was still like, of course, respecting Dr. Rankin's, pulled the video and still like being like, but wait, and then your book. It just, Jessica, just like honed in everything for me and was just like, no, that's wrong. And we need to, there's a lot of research studies that people hang on to. And you go into this in your book too, that like, okay, there were 7 participants, you know, and yet we right. use that research as like the golden rule on, you know, certain things. And it was just like, I don't know. I just, I deeply appreciate you and what I learned from you, because I feel like I'm on this journey of unpacking and working through my white privilege, and I'm getting it, but I'm not quite getting it. And the more I work, the more I just appreciate the labor of people like you that are willing to put your voices and your time out there. So thank you, because I mean, I knew Dr. Rankin's was right. I knew I, you know, but I just still needed to fully understand, because we're being told by Harvard, here's this education. And it's another example of sitting back and listening to the voices of Black people and their lived experiences, because that's what matters and that's what's important too.
Yeah. And Harvard probably didn't ask Dr. Rankin what she thought about. Yeah. So no. Yeah, who's in these conversations? And
right.
Of course,
and learning about food apartheid. And I think that that will kind of bring us into the conversation about the AAP guidelines. I hadn't heard the words food apartheid. I had always heard the food desert, right?
Yeah.
That had always been what I had heard. Can you share with the listeners what food apartheid is?
Yeah. And that one was relatively new to me as well. So desert implies something that's naturally occurring, right?
Yeah.
That, yeah, there's just naturally no grocery stores in this area. Or, you know, something that is just an absence of, like a natural absence, rather than like something that was socially and structurally constructed. So redlinings, building permits, basically who we want to have access to food. And all of those things were intentional. So it wasn't just like by accident or natural. Right. Yeah, that's how society has been constructed for sure.
Wow. With the AAP guidelines, so the American Academy of Pediatrics, we looked, and this just came out at the beginning of the year. They used to have like the wait and see approach. And I, you know, was always cautious when I go into doctor's visits with my son, and I would write on the forms, please don't talk about BMI or weight. Happy to talk about nutrition and physical activity. Because I've learned so much doing my own advocacy work in healthcare as a fat individual. And I just am so terrified and wanting to protect my son from the discrimination that I've faced in the doctor's office. And that had worked. And it hopefully will still work. But then the guidelines came out saying that there can be early proactive treatment for children as young as 2. Weight loss drugs prescribed to kids 12 and older, and weight loss surgery for kids 13 and plus with severe, and then the O word. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And I was so thankful for you and so many, especially dietitians, that came forward and were just like, we are setting children up for eating disorders.
Yeah, 100%. Something that until these guidelines, you know, people had asked, like, why'd you become a dietitian? And I was, you know, I love talking about food. I'm terrible at cooking it, but I love eating. You know, so I was like, if I can talk about it all day, that's great. But then with those guidelines, it just like activated like a memory in my brain. I thought I'd gone to a dietitian at age 8, but I looked at my medical record, it was 6. I remember trending at the top of the growth chart. Which to, you know, a 4 and 6 year old, that looks like winning. That's not in the middle. That's not the bottom. Who doesn't want to be at the top as a child? So that was great, but it was not great, turns out. And, you know, the doctor started like being hyper aware of my body, and it felt like real weird and like poking, literally poking and prodding, like, why are you, you know, a chubby kid? And so, yeah, sent to a dietitian at age 6. And I was the one being told stuff as a child, like, like I knew first what she was talking about with ounces, like right. these plastic, you know, the plastic food like stuff that we would put on a plate that was still, you know, the '80s. And like what the only thing that I actually remember that she said was like never eat more than two slices of pizza.
Oh and my gosh.
Like that. So that was real helpful, which is, you know, the guidelines now. It's like at two and above start quote like lifestyle changes. And what does that mean?
What does that mean?
To a two-year-old child. But then again, you know, so then from age six and actually beforehand, like my body's clearly a problem. That's why I have to go to all these doctor appointments, right? And like then I was putting the pieces together. You know, it wasn't because I saw that dietitian, but it's because, you know, my body was a problem to be solved. You know, maybe I can support these other people who have like bodies that are inherently problem, you know, and there we are. Here we are today. Yeah.
I hate that that was your lived experience, but I'm sure it only like it brought you on this path, right? Yeah. And it only helps you to support people even further and then work your lived experience as a Black woman and a queer woman also relating into your work and helping to dismantle that this isn't about the diet industry, you know. I mean, it is, but it isn't. Like, it's really the root of the pursuit of thinness is the pursuit of whiteness.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, also came into the Health at Every Size, like conversations I was having, because as I was starting, as it was unraveling right in front of me, you know, I would talk to, you know, my Black and brown friends, Black and brown fat friends, and they were like, this is nice. Like, this whole Health at Every Size thing is great. I'm still fat. I'm still trans. I'm still queer when I go to the doctor's office. So y'all can be doing, you know, what you want with Health at Every Size, because it might help you, right? Again, last, you know, acceptable prejudice.
Yeah.
Thoughts. Yeah. So yeah, with the guidelines, and I'll apologize. You said something and then I just started talking about Health at Every Size.
No, it's the perfect time because seriously, as a, you know, fat woman, like when I learned about Health at Every Size, you know, I'd spent my whole life dieting, searching for the answer and searching to release and searching not to torture myself and searching not to always just keep ending up bigger and hating myself. Like, mm-hmm. And then it was just like, oh, I can exist. I can tune into my body. I can do these things. This is amazing. Everyone should know about this.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It sounds great.
Yeah, it does.
Right.
But then you dig into it more in the way you've talked about intuitive eating in your book, too, and dismantling it. The way you talked about moralizing food. I think about that with my kiddo and, mm-hmm. you know, how that relates to, you know, I think, you know, sometimes for parents, especially when we say that all this AEP stuff is starting at the age of two, you're just like, God, at the age of two, I just want my kid to eat.
Yeah. Enough food? To eat. That would be great.
And mm-hmm. then now, you know, as they're getting older, we talk about how food isn't bad or good. It's food. But then I'm like, but there is food that's really good and I really enjoy. So I've started to talk about, you know, there's food that, you know, is more muscle food and gives you strength. And then there's mm-hmm. food that is really delicious and delightful. But sometimes when we eat it, we kind of crash afterwards. So maybe we can try some muscle foods with some sweet foods. And, you know, I just don't want to mess him up, which I'm going to and society is going to, right? And I just am like, you know, as a parent, I just want to do the right things.
So I talk about food and like, no moralizing of food, but I think you were trying going along the path of, you know, when it comes to intuitive eating, you know, I mentioned in the book, like there's, you know, dietitians who will be like, I learned to eat, you know, intuitively, and now I feel very comfortable eating, you know, like pizza, or now I feel comfortable eating cake. And I'm like, this is what the goal was. So like, you're inherently saying, you know, don't eat too much of these. Only eat them until you're full also, and never eat them about your feelings, you know, so you have to be hungry. It only has to be until you're satisfied. And so you can eat those foods. Then it's still this like weird, if I give myself permission to eat all foods, I won't eat as much of them. It's still like the same.
Still rules.
Yeah, it's still the same situation because yeah, nowhere is any dietitian, you know, an intuitive eating dietitian saying, now I can eat all the vegetables that I ever want. And like, no, because like, it's still about, you know, we don't care how many vegetables you eat. You can eat all of them past fullness or whatever. But we're really worried about are these other foods. But that's the unsaid, you know, portions of it. And it's still the moralizing of like those foods. And like, we're not worried about these foods, the ones who have like 0 points, perhaps, on Weight Watchers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still caught myself like learning in your book a lot and then still wanting an answer, still wanting the
1,000%.
Key. Right? What do I do as a fat person whose society doesn't like, even though I'm a white person? How do I make it better? And it all goes back to like, but I'm doing all this work unpacking my own weight bias and size bias, and yet I'm still looking for the answer.
Yeah. A friend of mine, you know, has told me that my philosophy is eat food and feel how it feels. And that's terrifying to her.
Yeah.
As someone, yeah, who is, you know, struggled with restriction and a bunch of stuff for a very long time. She's like, what are you saying? Like, there's no way. And I'm like, if I had a way, I would not be here. I would be a gazillionaire. there really is no way. So I think in the food and the way, you know, for white folks, like there could be still a way, you know, that I am able to achieve, you know, peak privilege as thin people. But for a lot of other folks, like eating away is still not going to bring me, quote, food freedom or body liberation,
right?
Where, you know, there's the idea, you know, we can eat or have rules for ourselves that will like protect us. And then for other folks, like that's just not ever going to happen. So yeah, who's able to like participate in these questions, and when does cookies have bring or become liberation is always the question. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's
a lot.
It's a lot, but it's important. It's important. And I love how Joy, especially at the end of your book, is just like such a piece of just existing and being. And through nutrition and your focus as a dietitian is just like some of the questions that you ask your patients about food or just eating and the amounts that we eat. I really took away when portion sizes and asking, well, if you had a date over, What would you make for them? Like, what portion would you make for them while you're eating? I think the example is like six chicken nuggets and
vegan,
carrots and hummus.
Vegan nuggets.
Uh-huh. Yes, vegan. And knowing that they were going to drive home to In-N-Out on the way and pick up a juicy burger because they're hungry.
Right.
And that was really powerful too. And I think about that in all relation to like being a parent and feeding my kiddo too, of like just being aware of these things and like not trying to put in my own fears and my own lived existence into how I feed him and how I talk about food and how I try to protect him as well.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with a couple parents yesterday, and I had like two parents, as many people do. Mom was like always dieting, would eat like silly nothings for food. And I would always question like, how is this enough? But that's beside the point. And then my dad, so they were divorced, but very like, we were still in the same household. So it would be like this juxtaposition of, I remember from a very early age as an only child, like wanting to be my dad. And like, he was the role model. And I remember very clearly wanting, like knowing that I was on my way because I could fit like a whole Ritz cracker in my mouth, you know? So like when I could fit a whole orange slice, let me tell you, like, so this is what I saw him do. And so like him and food was just like, whatever like goes in. I was older before the whole Oreo fit in, but like that was just how he was eating. And with my, you know, weight, and you mentioned your child, I remember that like 10 or so, we were doing like averages, means in school. And so, you know, everybody in the class had to go around and say their weight, and we were going to find the average weight of the class. And like going around the room, like by far, like I weighed the most. So of course, when it got to me, I was like, I don't know how much I weigh, but you know, of course I did, because I had to go to the doctor all the time to be weighed. And I was feeling sad that day. You know, my dad was over and we were just chatting, and I was like, this was sad. This thing happened today. And he asked me, he's like, oh, how much do you weigh? And I told him, he's like, oh yeah, that seems like a normal thing for a 10-year-old to weigh. Move on. And I still remember that moment, like 30 something years ago. Like, he wasn't, he didn't do like this whole body positive speech.
No, right. Body neutrality.
Right. It wasn't this like, you know, I really want you to feel good about your body. But I remember, I was like, oh, my dad thinks that's normal. I guess so. Like, you know, just, it wasn't, didn't become like a moment. It was just like a touchstone that I remembered that, like, as the response, you know, so yeah, they're like, we don't want to, you know, like, mess up our kids, but of course we're going to.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, how are we having these conversations? And I find oftentimes,
I love that story.
Yeah, me too. He's kind of the best, but like the context that we have. So, you know, there's a lot of performance in, you know, wanting to feel, you know, great about our bodies, and especially in front of, you know, other people, in front of like young people. And I 1000% do that as well. But like, where can we provide context? In the book, you went through the portion of respectability and how we can police each other's behaviors. And what, you know, it comes down to at the end is like, we need to perform for white supremacy when it comes, you know, between Black women, and, you know, like, don't talk a certain way or don't dress a certain way, et cetera. And we just, you know, put that onto people. We don't say why, like, you shouldn't X, Y, or Z. We don't say, like, in a society that is trash, white people are going to, you know, treat you differently, look at you differently. Here are some options for how to like navigate that space, but you can do whatever you want and your body is not the problem. Yeah. So like having, those conversations in context with kids, like, I get this, like, but this is why this is happening, rather than just like, oh, you know, we're going to pretend it's not happening, or like the world isn't telling you things about your body. But like, yeah, context. Granted, I, you know, that is also like a clinician perspective of what.
No,
you know,
I appreciate it. Because you got to meet kids on their levels to have these conversations.
So smart.
But, and they're so smart and they get it. And oh my gosh, like, I started unpacking white privilege in my 30s. Could you imagine if my kids started doing it at 13 almost?
Yeah.
Like, how rad would that be? And how much of an impact could that have on his life and everyone in his bubble too?
I know. I had a kid, or I think she was 13, a client, and I was saying something about body politics. She's like, oh yeah, I started an Instagram account with my friends about intersectional feminism, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, okay. I will, you know, not assume that you, you know, do not know about, you know, white supremacy, capitalism, and patriarchy. Sounds good.
Yeah. Are you plus size and pregnant or trying to conceive? Do you wonder where you can find cute plus size maternity clothes, or when you'll start showing and how to embrace your pregnant body? What about having a healthy pregnancy and how to reduce your increased risk? Find the answers to these questions and so much more within the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. From nutrition and physical activity to prenatal care expectations and the importance of hiring a size-friendly care provider, you'll not only learn information to help you make informed decisions throughout your pregnancy, but start to develop a new relationship with your body. Download this guide and start using it at any point in your pregnancy. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Use code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. Can we talk a little bit about these infuriating guidelines from the American Academy of Pediatrics? And then I want to talk to how this really will impact and is impacting, especially Black families, even more.
Mm-hmm.
What is, when you read through these guidelines as, you know, not only a community activist and organizer, but as a dietitian, like, what was your reaction to them?
Horrified, as I'm sure everyone was, but then getting, you know, to the end. So I did do like a full read of all of them, and it just became clear how much the AAP and others just don't care about kids. And I was wondering what it really was about, but also I know what it's about. But even at the end and in all the, you know, limitations of this paper, like, they are very honest. There is no research that shows.
Right.
Yes, there's none. that shows that kids as young as two, you know, should or have benefited from, quote, lifestyle changes or whatever. I looked in some, like I did some, you know, citation searches, and it was, you know, maybe they changed their behaviors, but it didn't change, quote, adiposity. So like it didn't change their weight. So like everything that you're judging, you know, or like implementing these guidelines on is not, you know, true, basically. And why are you doing this? It's because, you know, of your both anti-fatness, but let's look back at centuries and understand that anti-fatness is inherently anti-blackness because, yeah, you know, white and pure, you know, individuals via, you know, our Puritan, you know, structures and religions and values was positioned in direct opposition to blackness, which was supposedly gluttonous and fat. So, you know, wanting these kids to fit this like small ideal, like we can't separate that from like the eugenics that we're really looking to craft, you know, white kids and let the other races basically like die off, you know, so we have like thin people and then the rest, whatever. So what, you know, all these structures that we're going to implement are really to benefit like the ways that we can make, you know, white kids slimmer and whatever. But also I will say as a clinician and, you know, that I'm having these conversations with, thankfully, public health students now, is that we're so clear about all of the things that contribute to our weight, genetics, right? Intergenerational trauma, adverse childhood events, just, you know, environment, you know, whatever is food access, like going long periods of time without eating mm-hmm. food. There are, you know, at least 15, if not 20 things that are, have direct impacts mm-hmm. on our weight. But what the, you know, public health community is saying is not actually let's address these structures. What we're right. saying as public health, which is literally supposed to be like systemic stuff, is like, let's focus on the individual, which is baffling.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Well, no, actually, and again, it's not. So, you know, who inherently is going to have access to all these tools, right. quote, you know, tools, who's going to be able to behave in these ways? Who's able, you know, to have access to whatever these quote lifestyle behaviors are? It's not going to be those without healthcare. It's really not going to be most Black and Brown folks. It's not going to be poor folks, folks in rural areas. So like, yeah. even though these guidelines are ridiculous, they are still there for folks with privilege and like still furthering the project of, you know, thinness as closer to godliness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't go that deep. I should have, but I was just like, what the? Bleh? And I literally just went onto Instagram and I'm like, this is a bunch of, bleh! And I've got a, you know, cause I have a kid going through adolescence. So I'm like, of course he's going to get bigger. I would never imagine like, putting him on weight loss drugs. Like I just, no. I couldn't. And I just vented from the heart. Like, cause I just want to protect children from harm. And to me, this is harmful. And I did have some people message me and they said, Jen, I would have been so thankful had my parents intervened mm-hmm. at a young age. Mm-hmm. And I just held space for their stories, but I didn't really know how to respond to that.
I was listening to an NPR story last night of one of the first like teens to be put to be given a gastric sleeve and how she thought it was great. And then, you know, I looked her up and she is very fat now.
Yeah.
You know, so like this quote treatment of obesity and her success story, you know, did not treat in quotation marks her and again quotation marks obesity, like it made her behave like to what like her doctor was telling her. But what is the goal here? And I'm still unclear.
Yeah. Yeah,
like completely unclear, because if we're not quote solving obesity, because we're just getting larger, we're also getting taller, you know, like we're getting larger in all ways. So what are we doing when we're pretending that, you know, global health is about size and it's, we know it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. Do you have advice for all parents going to take their kids to the pediatrician? Because in all honesty, like, my kid is due for his annual checkup and he has gone to the doctor. I've taken him. He had a cold and it wasn't going away. And I have taken him since these new guidelines came out, but I have not taken him. And he is a little behind now that I'm saying this out loud for his annual visit. And I'm sure that this is a part of why I haven't scheduled that appointment.
Totally. What I wish my parents had known is that, you know, my body is not like a problem to be solved.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, fully growing until like 18 or 19. So who knows what is going to happen? But it's so hard to not like want to do and be so vulnerable to what, you know, a doctor is saying, but, you know, and also want to be compliant, you know, to be, you know, that a good parent, because like you want a doctor to treat your child generally.
Especially a fat parent in the doctor's office. But I'm also a fat white parent. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But I just right now want to talk about any parents and especially parents of size, because we know that we're being judged. Absolutely. And especially with these new guidelines that basically just confirmed it. We want to make sure that your kids don't grow up to look like you.
Yep. Right. Because the problem with fat kids is that become fat adults.
Yeah.
And you're like, how? Yes. So the reason that these guidelines are there is because, you know, so that people don't grow up, you know, to be the same size or to be their parents, which is inherently anti-fat and harmful and terrible. So the advice I wish my mom, you know, or what I wish my mom had done is like, tell me that this appointment is required, you know, for these, you know, handful of things. Like, we have to go for this, going in and coming out. You know, I want you to know that what they say, you know, we will, you know, we can discuss, but your body is not a problem. When they go in there, they're not going to treat you like a human. They're going to treat you, you know, like basically a thing that needs solutions. And that is, you know, not who you are. You are a human with, you know, agency. So I would love to have had that conversation, honestly. Yeah,
your body is not the problem.
Yeah.
And I feel like I try to protect him by writing, because you have to fill out these forms at every annual visit of like, you know, how are they sleeping? Is there television in their bedroom? Are there guns in the home? Like all these questions. But then at the bottom writing, like, let's not talk about BMI and weight. I don't know how that will be received after this. So I definitely need to go, and I will still write that. So I feel like I'm doing everything to try to protect him while not looking at him and having that conversation with him before we even walk through the door. So thank you, Jessica. That's really good advice. And then decompressing afterwards. This is something I think naturally we do. Like, hey, how do you feel about that? I mean, it's just kind of like a parent thing that you do so often, but not beforehand in that preparation. And I feel like it's my own nervous energy too. Like, okay, we just got to get through this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Because as, you know, adults, we can have those thoughts and just get through it for sure. Yeah. But knowing that my experience was valid and what a doctor was saying was, you know, trash would have been great.
Right. All right. Now, I'm a white parent who's fat, but in this doctor's office, I know if a doctor were to look at me and say, Brayden needs to have weight loss drugs, I would leave and I would never go back, and I would feel, I wouldn't worry that CPS could get called, or I wouldn't worry that there would be some kind of investigation to my child's wellness. Mm-hmm. I would feel totally fine being like, what is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. And then grabbing my child and walking out, calling the office back and saying, you better not bill me for this, like doing all these things. But I have privilege because of the color of my skin to not even worry that there would be an aftermath for that. That is not the same for Black parents at all in many situations. How is it different, and what are things that we need to know, and especially for my Black listeners right now too?
I'm definitely thinking about the family in Texas whose baby had jaundice and went to the doctor. Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Sorry, not even baby, like weeks old.
Newborn, 10 days old, I think. Yeah. It was 7 or 10 days old.
Went in, you know, doctor said this, we need to make some changes here. This is what I want to do. Took the baby home. Midwife said, like, this is, you know, what you could do.
Yeah, they had a home birth.
Right. So, you know, this is what we'll do here. And the doctor indeed called CPS for the parents leaving and not doing whatever the doctor's treatment was. So, yeah, as somebody who could just like take their child and go home and not be worried about it, they haven't seen their, you know, baby in weeks and who is now in foster care. They don't know where their child is because they didn't do the doctor's treatment for dumps. I can't even imagine that on so many levels. But yeah, that's, I think about that often. Parents who are already, you know, inherently thought to be non-compliant.
Non-compliant. Yeah, those words.
Yeah. Parents, you know, all parents and all people who are, you know, quote, non-compliant because I didn't do X, Y, or Z thing. But what does that mean when your healthcare options are so limited? Like there's one clinic or, you know, and to get anything done, you know, you have to do, you know, jump through the hoops in order to get like whatever it is that you're actually trying to get done. And so that's an access issue. And yeah, I think of CPS often and what this is really going to do when, you know, Black children are already thought to be, you know, unhealthy just because of their existence. And yeah.
Do you have any advice for families that might be worried about this?
It's easy for me and my friends to say, like, look up fat positive, you know, outlets and resources. And that is great. And, but also that does not guarantee at all that they're not going to be anti-Black or, you know, anti-trans in the office, which is something that a friend of mine is encountering all the time, looking at those fat positive resources. I don't love telling or suggesting people to be their own advocate because I feel like the burden lies, you know, with them rather than like me pushing in the systems. I hate that. But I do recommend or can recommend, you know, having somebody, having a friend, you know, go with you to the doctor, having a white friend. A couple of months ago, a friend of mine was trying to get Paxlovid and, you know, was getting berated because she didn't list obesity as a, you know, pre-existing condition and, you know, was getting, and I was like, just give me the number. You go take a nap. Like, aww. I'm great at yelling. It's like, these things, I need these things. Whatever you're saying is not important because what is important is
that I get this so I can, get through COVID and not get sick, really, really sick.
Your feelings are fine, but what needs to happen is, so if they're, you know, perhaps or hopefully there are folks who can advocate for you who have more privileged, but also just being, I would say if you have someone to go with you or somehow be supportive in a way or do the advocacy for you, that is great.
And we know statistically that when you bring someone else with you to the doctor's visit, that you are more likely to be treated differently and better. And that's really messed up because there's a witness.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Other advice I've heard is to just say, thank you so much for the information. Is there anything else you'd like to provide us with? Or can you send me an email with links and we're going to go home and we're going to talk about it and we're going to review it? You know, so you're not saying no, you're not saying yes. Mm-hmm. And then you can walk out that door. And that may or may not be the right choice for you. But in some situations, it is really next to impossible to be your own advocate. And in other situations, you don't have someone else you can bring with you. Or maybe I could, my son would not want my friend, my thin friend to come with us for his annual visit. So like, what can we do in these situations that can be really, really hard to navigate?
I struggle with those because, you know, we get the one perhaps good, you know, doctor, but then we need referrals or whatever, you know, we just keep going and hitting brick walls. And, you know, it's because obviously it's the structures that need to change. You know, we get that one good, you know, therapist, dietitian, doctor, but once we have to, you know, see more than that person, it just ends up falling apart. So yeah, my ideal world, of course, is to, you know, undo all these structural things or at least, you know, have your own like full medical practice or all, but it's so like unrealistic. But yeah, having conversations up front with a medical provider and doing some you know, initial like interviewing, like, are you going to, you know, take my
that's great
away from me? Like, what are your protocols if I do or do not do this? Tell me about your policies is another one that I would want to know.
Oh, that's really good. And you can even call in advance and ask
for policies. Because people will have them. Yeah. Are you, what will happen if I don't do these things that you're telling me?
Right. That's really good. And I even think like, can I get this in writing? Oh, can you send me an email? That way you have it. That's really, 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 really powerful. Really powerful. And I think about like my list of like size friendly care providers, but I don't dig in deeper of like, are you also, you know, anti-racist and LGBTQ plus positive? And yeah, I mean, there's just so much more that we need to do to create safe experiences for people in our community, because the whole system is set up for thin white people. Thin white men, especially, the medical system was designed for.
Yeah. I, of course, always think of Serena Williams and her birth story.
Right? Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Like, if that is possible, like, anything is possible.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, Jessica, I am so thankful for you and your work. And I think one thing that we can all do is to tune into your work to help us work towards understanding how these systems are set up, understanding how thinness is connected to whiteness. So us as parents can help hopefully rewrite things for future generations and amplify the lived experiences of our friends who are Black and their children, and help to create change with so much generational harm that has occurred. And by doing that, it all gets better for all of us.
That's right. Isn't that the part that we don't talk about? Yeah. You know, we just, we don't, because of the link, not having the link between fatness and Blackness, but if we actually, you know, like did and make, you know, the world, the country, the medical system, you know, a better place for Black folks, like that inherently benefits fat white folks and white folks in general. But yeah, that's the wild part for sure.
Absolutely. And I talk about it. I do a lot of my work around, you know, pregnancy and talking about the heart-wrenching maternal mortality rates for Black pregnant people and babies, and that the systems we can put in place to help change that, change all of maternity care as Like, let's have these conversations. This is why it's important. And thank you.
Yeah,
can we welcome. Maybe touch on joy before we end? Sure. I feel like I feel like I want to bring a little joy in for everyone, right?
So, like, why is this a pivot? No, it was so the whole book kind of leads to the last section where, you know, I want to rewrite vulnerability. You know, I say that I would love to not have to be magic or have Black excellence. Yeah. I just want to be regular.
You just want to exist.
Yeah, to just be.
Yeah, to just be. You write that a few times.
Yeah.
I just want to be. And I was just like, I just want you to be and to feel safe being.
I want all of us. Yeah.
All of us. Yeah.
Just be able to be. And then, you know, it moves into, you know, joy as resistance in this world that, you know, is always, you know, policing us, or, you know, we're experiencing violence. And, you know, how building community and having joy in, you know, community can be so affirming, because these things are incredibly harmful and also at the same time almost laughable. So, you know, just being with one another can be so important, and being able to laugh, and if not at these things because they're trash, then together and experiencing joy of just experiencing the same things.
What brings you joy
today? You know, my joy, I always say, is Black women laughing loudly. is one. My therapist actually said for her that it's Black women winning. And I was like, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Maybe better than mine.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's becoming spring. So my competition, my gardening competitions with my dad always bring me joy. I really, this is not going to be my year. It is next year. And then more, yeah, travel and getting out and about. I'm so hopeful for in 2023.
I love all that. Well, along with playing Dungeons and Dragons, listening to and learning from amazing humans like you brings me immense joy. So I want to not only, as we've been talking this whole time about your book, It's Always Been Ours, Rewriting the Story of Black Women's Bodies, which I encourage you to get anywhere, but also, as I shared in the very beginning, consider the audiobook and hearing, especially if you've enjoyed all this time with Jessica, hearing her tell the story in her own words is very, very impactful. And you can also listen and dig in even deeper with your podcast, the My Black Body Parts podcast as well. And I love following you over on Instagram. So tell us all where we can find you and, and tap into all of your work and support you and amplify you. And you were the co-founder of the Amplify Melanated Voices Challenge in 2020, which is just so amazing too. So thank you for all that you've done.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm over on the Instagrams at jessicawilson.msrd. I'm trying out the TikToks. at by Jessica Wilson. Because yeah, a lot of my Instagram audience skews a lot younger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's fun to be over there on TikTok, and it's a lot of dopamine, like a lot more dopamine is over there, depending on how you curate your algorithm. So those are, you know, the primary two. I always encourage folks to reach out to me. I do consultation for, you know, clinicians, therapists. So if folks are interested in that, just let me know.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And thank you for you and all that you do. And thank you for giving us your time today. It means so much to me.
So. Oh, it was great to talk to you.
All right. Well, thanks, friends. Until next time, definitely find some joy as well. And let's start doing a lot of hard work to make this place, this world. And it sounds cheesy, but it's true. But better for all of us by just working through our inherent biases, and especially uplifting our Black friends and families and those that we care about. Thanks, friends. Bye.
Bye, Jen. This was great.